Welcome to the Verity Podcast for Saturday, March 9th, 2024, where we separate the spin from the facts. I'm Scott Wallace.
And I'm Eric Steiner. As we look at today's top stories, President Joe Biden delivers his 2024 State of the Union Address.
Hong Kong fast-tracks a stringent new national security law.
Sweden formally hands documents to the U.S. State Department to join NATO.
At least 287 Nigerian students are abducted from their school by gunmen.
Theresa May announces she won't seek re-election.
A controversial Canadian law is proposed to target hate crimes.
Six members of the Sri Lankan community are tragically murdered in Ottawa.
Donald Trump posts bond in the E. Jean Carroll case.
Democrats open a probe into Starlink's alleged use by Russia in the Ukraine war.
And Akira Toriyama, the iconic creator of Dragon Ball, passes at 68.
In our top story, President Biden delivers the State of the Union. The facts are agreed upon by CNN, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Fox News, and Daily Wire. U.S. President Joe Biden on Thursday gave his State of the Union address before Congress, during which he discussed domestic and foreign policy issues and criticized Republican former President Donald Trump, his likely opponent in the 2024 presidential election. On the domestic front, Biden called on Congress to protect abortion and in vitro fertilization, or IVF, vowed to raise taxes on the wealthy and corporations, and reiterated his support for a border security deal that recently failed in the Senate. While speaking on immigration, Biden was interrupted by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, who referenced an immigrant who allegedly killed student Lakin Riley. Veering off script, Biden acknowledged the crime, but said thousands of legal residents also commit murder. Biden was also interrupted by the father of a Marine who died during the Afghanistan withdrawal. The man stood up and repeatedly shouted, quote, Abbey Gate, referring to an entrance at the Afghanistan airport where 13 U.S. soldiers were killed. He was removed from the event and arrested. Biden's reelection campaign, which raised $1 million on Thursday before the speech, said it had its best fundraising during the 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. hours of the address. Following the speech, Senator Katie Britt, Republican of Alabama, delivered the GOP's rebuttal speech. In it, she accused Biden of hypocrisy on immigration, claiming he's suspended all deportations, halted construction of the border wall, and announced a plan to give amnesty to millions.
Thanks, Eric. On this program, we separate the spin from the facts. Unsurprisingly, we have some political narratives on this story, starting with a Democratic spin from MSNBC. Biden's speech was a thoughtful yet fiery defense of every core American value. His defense of abortion rights and IVF exposed Republicans as opponents of the mothers and fathers they claim to support. In contrast to the GOP's doubts about his cognitive status, Biden proved his competency with his sharp and witty address.
Follow that with a Republican narrative coming from Breitbart. Biden's speech was nothing but a partisan rant that glossed over all of his failed policies and ills of the country. All the American people need to do to know about the state of the nation is look at the crisis at the southern border or at inflation, and they'll see how Biden has done nothing to better their lives. This is why Biden needs to be replaced this fall.
And from time to time, we have statistics-based nerd narratives brought to us by the Metaculous Prediction Community. There's a 50% chance that President Joe Biden will have a net approval rating of at least negative 11.39 by November of 2024. Hong Kong fast-tracks a tough new national security law. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the South China Morning Post, Al Jazeera, Global Times, Hong Kong Free Press, BBC News, and CNN. A bills committee in Hong Kong's Legislative Council begins to address Friday the full draft of a new national security legislation that threatens stiffer penalties for newly listed crimes, with extra full-day sessions scheduled for the weekend to expedite the process. Provisions include life in prison for treason and increased punishments for collusion with espionage, external forces, sedition, and state secrets. It also allows police to detain suspects for 2 weeks before charging them. This comes as the LegCo completed the first and second readings of the Article 23 draft. But earlier that day, just hours after the 212-page extension to the national security law was gazetted, Chief Executive John Lee revealed on Thursday that he had told LegCo President Andrew Leung that both the government and the legislature must spare no effort to enact the bill as soon as possible. Last week, the public consultation process on the legislation came to an end. Given that the pro-Beijing camp dominates the legislative branch, the bill is largely expected to be passed and enshrined in Hong Kong's basic law, with minimal opposition, reportedly, by April. Authorities claim that the legislation is needed to close gaps in the 2020 national security law. 2 decades ago, an attempt to pass Article 23 laws prompted large protests in Hong Kong that forced the government to retreat.
Scott, thank you for the facts. We're going to look at the spins, and the first one is an anti-China narrative coming from New York Times. Hong Kong authorities, under pressure from the Chinese Communist Party, have pushed this new security law at an unprecedented pace, and with little regard to public submissions, to further crack down on dissent in the once autonomous and democratic financial center. Yet again, Beijing's puppet regime is threatening freedoms and rights in Hong Kong.
Counter that with this pro-China narrative from China Daily Hong Kong. After a long wait that included taking into consideration public submissions to the bill, Hong Kong authorities have finally tabled this much-needed legislation. Despite Western sources claiming the opposite, the fact is that these Article 23 laws meet all applicable international conventions and standards, as well as human rights protections and procedural safeguards.
Metaculus has a nerd narrative. It says there's a 50% chance that Hong Kong will stop being a special administrative region of China by September of 2046. Sweden formally joins NATO. Here are the facts as agreed upon by Fox News, Financial Times, Forbes, TASS, BBC News, and CNN. Sweden formally joined NATO on Thursday as Prime Minister Ulf Kristersson handed over the country's instrument of accession to the U.S. Department of State, the treaty depository for the alliance. A flag-hoisting ceremony will take place Monday at the NATO headquarters in Brussels to welcome Sweden as its 32nd member. This comes as Hungary, the final holdout on endorsing the Swedish bid, submitted its formal ratification to the U.S. State Department on Wednesday following parliamentary approval last week. The historically neutral Nordic country applied to join the military alliance and enjoy the protection granted under Article 5, nearly 2 years ago in the backdrop of the Kremlin's so-called special operation in Ukraine. All countries with shores on the Baltic Sea, except Russia, are now NATO member states, including Finland, which joined the alliance last year. Earlier this week, NATO kicked off its biannual 2-week Nordic response drill in the northern regions of Finland, Norway, and Sweden as part of its Steadfast Defender 24 exercises.
Thanks, Eric. We have a pro-establishment narrative from the Wilson Center. NATO has finally added Sweden's military and technological prowess to the international security bloc. Sweden is home to one of the biggest air forces in Europe, one of the leading 5G network manufacturing companies, and a robust public-private tech industry. The West is facing dangerous threats from the East, but some worries over security at least should be mitigated now that Sweden is part of the Atlantic Alliance.
Anti-war gives us an establishment critical narrative. The U.S. and its European proxies seem to have no care for world peace. After decades of NATO expansion eastward, Russia was finally forced to stop asking and start fighting. Now that the Western military establishment has gotten the war it sought for at least 15 years, at the expense of 400,000 Ukrainian soldiers and 10,000 civilians, the bloc continues to push eastward and further antagonize Moscow. NATO expansion is a proven cause of war, so why do they keep doing it?
And we have a nerd narrative from Metaculus. There's a 25% chance that Ukraine will join NATO before 2035. At least 287 Nigerian students are abducted from school by gunmen. The facts on this story are agreed upon by Arab News, MSN, Al Jazeera, The Guardian, and CNN. Nigerian authorities have reported that a group of armed militants raided the Kariga School in the country's northwestern Kaduna State early Thursday. According to the school's head teacher, the attackers kidnapped about 287 children. Student abductions are common and have been a major problem in northern Nigeria since 2014, when armed groups began kidnapping schoolchildren, villages, and visitors for large ransoms. Uba Sani, the governor of Kaduna, visited the school following the attack. The raid came just a few days after Islamists in northeastern Nigeria kidnapped over 200 people, mostly women and children. Though no one has claimed responsibility for Thursday's attack, Islamic State West Africa province has been cited as a suspect by anti-militant militia leaders. Recently elected President Bola Tinubu ran his campaign on a promise to end violence in Nigeria. However, there has been no tangible improvement in security. According to Olawole Ojewale, a West and Central Africa researcher at the Africa-focused Institute for Security Studies. In a statement, Amnesty International's Nigeria office strongly criticized the kidnapping and called on authorities to take immediate action to prevent attacks on schools, to protect children's lives and their right to education.
The First Spin is a pro-establishment narrative, and it comes from Newsday. Nigerian security services are currently conducting an extensive search and rescue operation in the nearby forests to find the nearly 300 abducted schoolchildren. The officials are certain that the victims will be retrieved, since this is the only acceptable outcome for the government and the waiting family members.
And we have an establishment critical narrative from Al Jazeera. The Nigerian government has neglected the people of the Northwest. Abductions are only made possible due to a lack of security, and in less than a week, extremist groups have abducted around 500 women and children. The government must do more to protect civilians, especially students, as militant groups in the Northwest have ramped up their campaign of violence and kidnappings.
And the nerds from Metaculus also have a narrative. They say there's a 44% chance Nigeria will experience a successful coup d'etat before 2040.
This is about as bad as it gets.
Yeah.
It doesn't even sound like a real story. I mean, there's a reason why other news outlets don't report this kind of thing, because no one really wants to hear this. That's really what's going on.
No. Theresa May says she won't run for re-election. The facts are agreed upon by Associated Press, Maidenhead Advertiser, Independent, BBC News, ABC News, and Guardian. Former UK Prime Minister Theresa May, 67, revealed that she will be standing down as a Member of Parliament, telling her local newspaper, the Maidenhead Advertiser, that she will not be running for re-election in this year's upcoming election. May has represented Maidenhead in Parliament since 1997, and she made the difficult decision to step away from politics so that she can champion causes close to her heart, including most recently launching a global commission on modern slavery and human trafficking. May became Prime Minister after Lord David Cameron resigned following the 2016 Brexit vote. Her tenure was controversial amid Brexit, and her decision to call a surprise snap election in 2017 resulted in her Conservative Party's loss of majority in the Parliament. While she was able to maintain her premiership thanks to a deal with Northern Ireland's Democratic Unionist Party, or DUP, she had lost significant support in her party. Her plan for leaving the EU conflicted with many Tories, and she resigned from Downing Street in 2019. She served as Lord Cameron's Home Secretary from 2010 to 2016, and unlike many former prime ministers, she continued serving as a lawmaker after stepping down. She is one of 64 Conservatives to not run for the upcoming election. In a statement, May said that she would work with her successor to secure a Conservative victory in Maidenhead, while voicing her support for Sunak. UK politicians released statements paying respect to May for her years of public service to Maidenhead and the UK.
Thanks, Eric. We have a pro-establishment narrative from The Times. Theresa May exhibited everything one would want a representative, and she selflessly served Maidenhead and the UK for nearly three decades. However, her diligence and grace were not enough for the detractors who sought to tear her down. May's cerebral and nuanced views made her an exceptionally effective politician, but it also hurt her status among the more populist members of her party. Through no fault of her own, May's premiership was unsuccessful, but she will be remembered as a pioneer and revered leader in the history books.
Unheard brings us a progressive narrative. For decades, Theresa May represented the far-right underbelly of UK politics, stoking fear and division in the country. Now she's trying to expunge her record as a divisive leader, and she's using the radical rightward shift of the Tories to paint herself as a moderate. Compared to her three successors, May might be slightly less egregious, but she cannot escape her many failures. Maybe her goodwill tour is out of sincerity, but it could also be motivated by a desire to clean up her image.
Conservative narrative comes from The Telegraph. In no way, shape, or form can Theresa May be considered a true conservative, and she's responsible for the impending doom awaiting the Tories in this year's election. May was unable to unite conservatives and often tiptoed around necessary action regarding Brexit and other pressing issues. While circumstance did not do May any favors, her inaction and lack of decisiveness doomed her premiership from the start. Theresa May may have had good intentions, but she failed as prime minister and has set the conservatives back many years.
There's a nerd narrative from Metaculus that says there's a 50% chance that Labour will win at least 360 seats in the next UK general election.
Canada proposes house arrest for potential hate crime risk. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Mercator, Mind Matters, CTV News, The Spectator, BBC News, and The Telegraph. Under the Online Harms Bill set forth by the Liberal Party of Canada, a set of provisions includes proposed steep penalties to combat online abuse, including house arrest for people at risk of committing hate crimes. House arrest procedures would involve electronic tagging, compulsory drug testing, and a communication ban if a judge sees the potential for a future hate crime. Awaiting parliamentary approval, the bill also seeks to regulate live streaming and social media platforms, which will be required to remove banned content within 24 hours. If banned, the legislation, which defines hatred as the emotion that involves detestation or vilification and that is stronger than disdain or dislike, will amend Canada's Criminal Code and the Canadian Human Rights Act. The new bill reportedly makes victims of hate speech eligible to receive compensation of up to $20,000, while it's expected to add a standalone hate crime component that would be punishable with life imprisonment. Canada's Justice Minister, Arif Virani, has defended the tougher proposed law, arguing that the country needs to respond to the rise in hatred against victims in Jewish and Muslim communities.
Scott, thank you for presenting those interesting facts. The first spin of this story is a right narrative coming from Toronto Sun. It's ironic that a global liberal icon like Prime Minister Justin Trudeau would conjure up such a dystopian proposal as the proposed Online Harms Act. There's no desperate need for such an autocratic law in a peaceful and prosperous nation like Canada. However well they may package it to make it palatable, Canada's parliament must reject this intrusion into personal liberties outright.
The Globe and Mail brings us the left narrative. If Canada must remain the haven of peace that it largely still is today, the country must buffet itself from a rising tide of hatred and hate speech. The proposed new law is a step in that direction and sets the bar deliberately high for the provisions that have drawn criticism, including life sentences for serious hate crimes. Nothing will be allowed to jeopardize free speech in Canada, and vulnerable communities must also be protected.
The nerds from Metaculus have a nerd narrative for this story, too. They say there's a 66% chance that the Conservative Party will win the most seats in the next Canadian federal election.
We've been doing this show for about 2 years. I swear for like the first year and a half, there was barely any Canadian stories. And now, I mean, there we have two. The next story is also Canadian. We've had a lot more Canadian stuff the past few months. What do you think that is?
No, I've noticed the escalation of the Canadian. I mean, they're just like becoming more and more of a presence.
Yeah.
In our next story, six members of the Sri Lankan community are tragically murdered in Ottawa. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CBS, New York Post, Reuters, BBC News, and Al Jazeera. Six people from Sri Lanka, including a mother and her four young children, were found stabbed to death in their home in the Canadian capital of Ottawa on Wednesday. Police said Febrio D'Souza, a 19-year-old student from Sri Lanka who lived with the family, has been arrested and charged with six counts of first-degree murder and one count of attempted murder. Police on Wednesday responded to emergency calls made around 10:52 p.m. from the suburb of Barrhaven, where they quickly identified the suspect and arrested him without incident. Ottawa Police Chief Eric Stubbs said the victims were stabbed with an edged weapon. So far, a motive and the nature of the relationship between the suspect and victims are unknown. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau condemned the killings, calling them an act of terrible violence. Mass killings are rare in Canada, and Ottawa, a city of 1 million people, had just 14 murders in 2023.
Thanks for those frightening facts, Eric. Narrative A comes from the Ottawa Citizen. Sources close to this tragedy have said the suspect expressed mental health issues in the months leading up to the killings, which isn't uncommon for students, especially from other countries, because they've been isolated since the start of the COVID pandemic. Communities must do more to address mental health issues to lower the risk of these type of incidents.
Narrative B comes from Al Jazeera. There is no justification for this extreme violence. This suspect callously murdered six innocent victims including four very young children. All of Canada is shocked and horrified, and everything possible must be done to hold the perpetrator of this heinous crime to account.
Trump posts bond for judgment in the Carroll defamation case. Here are the facts as agreed upon by ABC News, The Washington Post, The Hill, New York Times, Fox News, and Forbes. Former President Donald Trump's legal team Friday submitted a filing accounting he has secured a $91.63 million bond to cover the $83 million judgment plus interest he was ordered to pay in the defamation case brought by writer E. Jean Carroll. Trump had to post his bond in order to appeal enforcement of the judgment, which Alina Haba, one of his attorneys, in a statement called egregious and a result of numerous prejudicial errors. The bond was posted one day after a federal judge denied the Trump team's request to delay enforcement and ordered Trump to either pay Carroll $83.3 million or post bond. The Chubb Corporation, an insurance company, has underwritten the bond, which is a promise to cover the cost of the judgment if Trump loses his appeal and can't pay it. This comes as Trump is also facing a judgment of more than $450 million from a civil fraud lawsuit he lost in New York. Trump is attempting to secure a bond in that case while he appeals. Trump is also the frontrunner to be the Republican nominee for the 2024 presidential election, which projects to be a rematch of 2020 with President Joe Biden.
Okay, we got some spins for this story. The anti-Trump narrative coming from above the law. Considering he was ordered to pay close to $500 million for lying about his finances, it wouldn't have been wise for the court to trust Trump's claim he would be good for the money at the end of the appeal process. So the system has worked the way it should, with Trump forced to post bond and Carroll eventually being able to more easily collect her money from the bond issuer.
And pro-Trump narrative from Daily Caller. The political witch hunt orchestrated by the Biden administration and Democratic-appointed judges in an effort to derail Trump's campaign is continuing. Considering the illegitimacy of these judgments, Trump shouldn't have had to post bond. Now that he has, the process of exposing the error of the court's ways can commence, and Trump can get these judgments thrown out for their absurdity.
The nerds from Metaculous also have a narrative for this story. They say there's a 51% chance that Donald Trump will be elected president of the U.S. in 2024. Democrats probe SpaceX over Russia's alleged Starlink use. The facts are agreed upon by The Guardian, Washington Post, MSN, BBC News, Forbes, and CNBC. House Democrats have opened an investigation into SpaceX over Russia's alleged use of its Starlink satellite internet service in the country's war against Ukraine. Representatives Jamie Raskin, Democrat of Maryland, and Robert Garcia, Democrat of California, sent a letter to Elon Musk's company on Wednesday, asking it to report on complaints regarding possible illegal acquisitions of Starlink terminals, specifically in Russian-controlled regions of Ukraine. The letter states that the U.S. Department of Defense reached a deal with SpaceX in June 2023 to purchase 400 to 500 new Starlink terminals for Ukraine. However, last month, Ukrainian intelligence accused Russia of obtaining access to Starlink terminals. In their letter to SpaceX President Gwynne Shotwell, both Democrats asked if the company had appropriate guardrails and policies to ensure the Kremlin wasn't using its technology illegally. U.S. sanctions prohibit sending Starlink equipment directly or indirectly to Russia. In February, Musk had rejected claims that SpaceX was allowing Russia to access Starlink terminals, calling them categorically false. Democrats, who plan to coordinate with the Pentagon for their investigation, have given SpaceX until March 20th to respond to their queries. The House China Committee had previously asked Musk, who maintains that Starlink was not meant to be involved in wars, to provide SpaceX Starshield access to U.S. troops in Taiwan.
Thanks, Eric. We have a pro-establishment narrative from Newsweek. While Elon Musk may claim that Russia isn't gaining access to Starlink, multiple reports show that the Kremlin is deploying SpaceX technology to aid its brutal invasion of Ukraine. Even if SpaceX isn't completely defying U.S. sanctions by directly providing Starlink terminals to Russia, Musk's company is clearly not implementing the requisite safeguards to prevent Russian interference. Failing to stop Russia from using Starlink amounts to being complicit in its attack on Ukraine, and SpaceX must be investigated for its failures.
The establishment critical narrative comes from TASS. Paranoid intelligence officials and politicians are falsely accusing SpaceX of providing Starlink terminals to Russia, despite obvious evidence to the contrary. SpaceX owner Elon Musk has vehemently rejected claims that Russia was ever granted access to Starlink technology, and he has complied with all of the U.S. sanctions against Moscow. Meanwhile, the Kremlin has also echoed these facts and publicly acknowledges that it has never been supplied with Starlink terminals.
And a nerd narrative from Metaculus, there's a 50% chance there will be at least 10,800 Starlink satellites in operation on January 1st, 2028. Is there some limit to the amount of satellites we can have orbiting the Earth?
I don't think so. I don't think there's any regulations yet.
Man, I feel like
I haven't heard of any.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, it just feels like we're going to send an extra 10,000. Like, I feel like it used to be a news story. Like, oh, yeah, another satellite's going, the Hubble telescope's
right.
Going up.
Right.
Now, we're not going to hear about these. That's the last we're going to hear about these 11,000 satellites going up over the next 3 years. I don't know.
Can you imagine how many satellite trains that are going to be floating through the sky? Have you seen one of those satellite trains?
No. What's a satellite train?
Well, I mean, it's like a train of satellites hooked to each other. Like, there's like 10 of them in a row, and they just kind of float through the...
Is that a real thing, or are you just joking
around?
It is.
I've seen it. I saw it like 2 years ago when I was camping. Yeah,
that's
crazy. Oh, it is, dude.
All right. And sad news, as Akira Toriyama, the legendary creator of Dragon Ball, passes away at 68. Here are the facts as agreed upon by NBC, BBC News, the Associated Press, IGN, CNN, and USA Today. Japanese artist and anime creator Akira Toriyama, best known for creating the popular manga Dragon Ball, passed away on March 1st at the age of 68, according to Bird Studio. His studio announced his death 1 week later on Friday, revealing that the iconic creator died from an acute subdural hematoma. A small funeral for his family and a few close friends was held for Toriyama, according to the Dragon Ball website. One of the most influential creators in Japanese media, Toriyama started the Dragon Ball series in 1984, selling millions of comics worldwide and adapting his creations into the immensely popular TV shows, video games, and movies. The studio says Dragon Ball has sold 260 million copies altogether. He first entered the manga industry at just 23 years old after participating in an amateur creator contest in Kodansha's weekly Shonen magazine, and he went on to create many popular comics and shows in addition to influencing the gaming industry. Dragon Ball was a martial arts fantasy franchise that centered around Son Goku, a superhuman boy from outer space with a monkey who was on a quest for 7 Dragon Balls. Fans and fellow anime legends alike flocked to social media to express their condolences and admiration for Toriyama, with tribute posts garnering thousands of likes.
Scott, thanks for those facts. A great tribute. Narrative A is our first spin, coming from The Ringer. Akira Toriyama's death is a gut-wrenching tragedy for millions of manga fans worldwide, and we should use this time to honor the brilliance of Toriyama and celebrate what he has meant to the world of anime and media as a whole. Dragon Ball completely transformed Japanese comics and media, turning the beloved genre into a global phenomenon. Toriyama was an unprecedented genius. His creativity and storytelling created a limitless universe that has united people from opposite ends of the world, and his work remains extremely popular to this day. Toriyama's brilliance will never be forgotten, and his legacy will continue to live on.
And Narrative B comes from Hive Blog. Akira Toriyama meant a lot to many people, and his death is deeply saddening to everyone in the manga community. While he was one of the most famous manga creators, unfortunately, much of his work became stale as he tried to adapt to a broader audience. After reaching pop culture icon status, Dragon Ball jumped the shark, and Toriyama did little to save his creation from becoming just another over-commercialized production. We can honor the life and legacy of Toriyama while also recognizing the trajectory of his creative process.
And finally, there is a nerd narrative for this story. From Metaculus, they say there's a 50% chance that a computer program will be credited as an artist of at least 10 pages of content in Weekly Shonen Jump by June 2026.
You ever hear a Chrono Trigger, Eric?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. You did some cool stuff.
Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Saturday, March 9th, 2024.
Each day, we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
You can find out more at verity.news. You can also download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Scott Wallace, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.